Awa wala tinkering tum tum. So wa awa wala tinkering tum tum. See a letter wa. Eh awa ile popo. Eba wa yo. Ala fi ambo wa. Shogi shogi shogi.
I'm Dawn Burns, and this is The Sauce. We're cooking up a soul-satisfying taste of arts, music, and culture that will have you coming back for more. And we're right here on your NPR station, 88.1 WVPE. Russell Gunn is a Pan-African composer, producer, and trumpeter. He's the founder of the contemporary big band, the Royal Krunk Jazz Orchestra. He's performed with an array of great artists from a full spectrum of styles that include the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra, Maxwell, Angie Stone, Roy Hargrove, Marcus Miller, Les Nubiens, just to name a few. He's achieved 2 Grammy nominations for the albums Ethnomusicology Volume 1 and Volume 2. He has a new release entitled The Serious Mystery, Opus 4, Number 1. This is the second of a 3-album set that explores the history underlying his discovery of his personal roots. The album dropped recently and is brilliant. Jazz, hip-hop, poetry, marching band. I highly recommend watching them perform live if you haven't. It's some of the most exciting music I've witnessed in a long time. We talked about his new project, and he told me about the inspiration of his very personal album and his interest in the Dogon tribe of Mali, whose knowledge of space and planetary positions far outdate modern humanity. Hello, Russell Gunn. Welcome to The Sauce.
Well, hey, thank you for having me.
It's really a pleasure to have you. I'm really looking forward to talking to you today. Now, I want to begin with you being a pioneer of the jazz trap movement. Can you tell me a little bit about how you became a pioneer of this movement?
By doing it, I don't know. You know, that's how, when you start talking about that type of thing, it's always a slippery slope. Especially when you talk about being anything fusion wise, I guess it's always a slippery slope when you start talking about it. And I have a different perspective of it anyway. I don't feel like anything is anything that I do, or anything that anything fusion related. And by that, if anybody listening doesn't know what I mean, it's basically just the combining of 2 different styles. That doesn't really resonate with me, because I always came from the understanding that everything I do and everything we all do as African descendants is just part of the continuum of the music in general. So yeah, maybe I may be the first or one of the first to use this particular musical language with this particular musical rhythmic sense, but it doesn't make me an inventor or a pioneer. It just makes me someone who just came along at the right time and was able to understand both and continue the legacy of the music going forward.
Okay, that's beautiful. That's a really humble way to describe the vast, huge impact you have on Black American music, period, in my opinion. Yeah. You are from East St. Louis. You attended an HBCU, Jackson State University in Mississippi. Mm-hmm. You marched in an award-winning marching band called Sonic Boom of the South, which is all over your music. You feel that flavor all over your music. Can you talk to me about how that has influenced your composing?
Well, you know, the funny thing about when I went to college, and marched in the marching band, that was something that I didn't want to do initially. I just, because I was going to, I was a a jazz, no, I was a music education major. And quite honestly, I just didn't want to do that. I didn't feel like that was, at the time when I was young and stupid, I felt like that was not going to help me in any way to achieve anything musically that I thought that I wanted to achieve. But boy, was I wrong. And luckily, when you're young and stupid, some people have enough foresight to make you do things that you wouldn't do. So, long story short, as a condition of my scholarship, I had to do it. And I'm glad, I'm so glad and so thankful that they made me do it, because I learned things it's really hard to describe. I learned things about Black music that I wouldn't have understood unless I was a part of that. And when you talk about the HBCU marching band tradition, you're talking about a tradition of very, very serious people. Going back to the 50s, 60s, 70s, you're talking about conductors and bandmasters who were very, very serious about what they did. And not only from a musical standpoint, yes, but then the other, I guess, you know, we consider like the showmanship of it. And it's not easy to do both of those things. It's, as a matter of fact, it's very, very difficult. It may be the most difficult thing that you could achieve, a level of serious music artistry and a level of showmanship that's not where the showmanship isn't the only thing that you recognize. You recognize the musicianship and the showmanship. So just being a part of it, having to be in an ensemble with hundreds of people and watching those band directors bring it all together, delegating authority and responsibility to students to bring it all together, and one person being the final voice, it meant a lot. The whole experience meant a lot to me, and I'm so glad that I did it.
That's so beautiful. I mean, you're right that, you know, the marching band at the HBCU is no skip in the park.
Well,
it is so precise and so sophisticated, and everything is just so high level.
Yeah.
I think it's unrivaled, really.
Well, yeah. And up until now, nobody even came. Nobody went to an HBCU football game to watch a football game. Everybody's there. We don't have time to see what the band is going to do. I mean, it's changed a little bit now since in my alma mater, Deion Sanders is the head coach. But before then, I mean, really, nobody, by and large, paid attention to the football game. Everybody was there to see what the band was going to do at halftime. And it's a huge responsibility that I didn't even know existed until. And quite honestly, it wasn't until after I left the marching band that I really did it, that it really dawned on me the importance and the hugeness of what they were doing. So,
yeah. Yeah, I bet that's true. It was probably quite a whirlwind. You're studying jazz and marching band. No wonder your brain is so huge.
You know. Well, look, at HBCU, marching band is king. Trust me, that's first. Yeah. That comes first. If you wanna be a quote unquote jazz musician, I mean, you can get there, but you're going to have to get there on your own pretty much.
Yeah.
When you go to the HBCU, marching band is king, as it should be, because it's been that way for, almost 100 years now.
You're listening to The Sauce. I'm Dawn Burns.
Well, I could go on and on from this point throughout your life. You have a vast array of work that you have released, from a project that you did of Miles Davis's music as a trumpet player to other jazz projects. You've worked with different artists across the spectrum. of genres. But I want to kind of take a leap to your project called Pyramids. I was reading in a statement that you wrote on that album where you spoke with Hélène of Les Nubiens. And she was talking to you about Mali, and that led to the discovery of the Dogon tribe. Mm-hmm. Will you please talk to us about that conversation and how that influenced the direction that you might proceed from there?
It's a fortuitous, and if you believe in fortuitous things, but I believe in just the universe always puts you where you're supposed to be at the right time, good or bad, how you perceive it. So I had my DNA tested to see which region of Africa I most likely came from. And it came back as a small region in West Africa, a small country now known as Guinea-Bissau. And of course, that's just a colonial line. And Guinea-Bissau was part of many different empires, mainly the Empire of Mali.
The first encounter between Africans and extraterrestrial beings occurred more than 7,000 years ago. It is said that a door opened in this strange metallic sphere, and out of the sphere there came a long line of strange creatures. The leading creature lifted up its stick and its right hand, and it addressed the people as follows.
So those colonial lines really don't mean anything. It's just when you get your DNA traced back to and it comes back to a region, you have to consider the region and the people that inhabited the region since time immemorial. But anyway, so my conversation with her was, I told her that my DNA was most of it. The greater percentage, I guess, was from this small place called Guinea-Bissau. And she told me, just by looking at me, that she thought that I looked more like I was from Mali. And I didn't know a lot about Mali at the time at all, except that's where Timbuktu was. And I knew that that's where Mansa Musa was the emperor, and he was the richest man that ever lived. But that's about the extent of it. So, you know, you can't tell me something like that, and I don't go try to find out something about it. So that's what happened. And in reading up on all of these things about Mali, that's when I came across the Dogon tribe, and that really set the ball in motion for me.
Thank you. once reigned amongst the stars. The little lizard spell god. The strange creature spoke. It spoke for days, we are told, telling our people about the mysteries of
I think you really tapped into something with this album, though, with this project, because you titled this The Sirius Mystery, S-I-R-I-U-S, as in the planet Sirius, the star Sirius Mystery, Opus 4, number 1, which just released this month, right, on Rope Dope Records and Groid Music. And so you, I believe, tapped into, well, you talk about the doggone tribe of Mali, whose knowledge of cosmology, advanced mathematics, and science predates all modern technology by thousands of years. This is extraterrestrial information and downloads that you, I think, tapped into, and your music really tells the story.
Well, you know, it's funny. Somebody just asked me this 2 days ago about what I was trying. Like what am I really doing? What am I really trying to say? And it's always difficult to put into words. That's why we use music, because right. Music is it's like when there aren't really words for it. Music, I play with Marcus Miller, and yeah. That's something he likes to say. When there aren't words, that's when music comes in. But I was asked if, you know, what I'm really trying to do. And all I can say is that I'm just trying to give an interpretation of what I consider to be the facts. If I was anything else, then I would just be a writer, and I would just be writing what somebody else wrote or my written interpretation in letters. In numbers about what I interpret as what these facts are. So as a musically, I try to take the story, the folklore, because everything like any ancient civilization or culture, the stories, the truth, the science is all wrapped up in folklore, which makes the stories of all of these things interesting. That's why stuff like story of Amma's egg and story of the Nemo fish. Maybe in the oral tradition, maybe it's not 100% accurate about exactly this is what happened, but it's the truth within the folklore is what I'm trying to interpret.
Every song tells a story. A story that humanity needs to know about. Unknown things, impossible things, ancient things, potential things.
They say that history repeats itself, but history is only his story. You haven't heard my story yet. My story, yeah. My story, yeah.
Very, very powerful, I think. And now you had Wynton Marsalis play on the Doggone Primordial Permanence.
Yes.
That wasn't the first time that you've worked with him, though.
No, it wasn't the first time. It was, luckily, when I was still very, very young and I moved to New York, one of the first jobs I had was to be a trumpet player in his big band. And this is before it was actually called Jazz and Lincoln Center. It was just the Wynton Marsalis big band was pretty much sponsored by Lincoln Center, and then it became Jazz and Lincoln Center and all of that. But yeah, that was maybe my second gig in New York. And I was talking about this earlier, but the beautiful thing about how the world keeps evolving is that I got my chance, really, I got my opportunity by being in this big band, and for me to have my big band and he come and be a guest on it when I feel like I was ready to have him on something that was worthy of his greatness.
Mm.
It was beautiful for me.
Russell, I'm so thankful that you took the time to talk to me today. I wish we had more time to talk. I could dedicate the whole program about just your journey, because I think what you're doing is really powerful and wide. It's just wide, you know, it's wide reaching. And for you to have such a humble spirit and, you know, so much knowledge, and I think what's become maybe a level of instinct for you is really, you know, translating in your music. So congratulations.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I appreciate the time that you took to speak with me, and I hope to speak with you again soon.
All right, my pleasure. All
right.
You heard from Russell Gunn and the Royal Krunk Jazz Orchestra with their songs The Pneumofish, Natatory Astronauts, The Doggone, Primordial Permanence, and Amma's Egg, The Structure of Matter, all from their dynamic new album, The Serious Mystery, Opus 4, Number 1. Up next, I speak with singer-songwriter and my friend, Mike Struan.